Good afternoon, members, everyone. Welcome to the committee. Do we have a quorum? Representative Atkins?
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, nice to see you. Nice
you too,
to see
Madam
everyone.
Chair.
So I would like to approve the minutes. Representative Slocum, would you like to move the minutes for January 16th, 2013?
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion prevails. The minutes for January 16th are approved. Today, our agenda is one House File 5, and Representative Chairman Atkins is here with that. Today, the bill we have for consideration, and Mr. Chairman or Representative Atkins, what would you prefer, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind? I think that was a would be
How about
appropriate.
Just Joe, maybe? Okay. I don't know. Whatever you're comfortable with, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chairman, would you care to move your bill?
I would. Members, I'd move House File 5 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Government Operations.
Thank you.
So moved. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I think I'll go with that term today. With that, your bill before us, would you tell us about your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The first thing I'd start with, and I learned in law school, you're never supposed to start with an apology, but I apologize to members of the committee. This is a departure for the House Commerce Committee. We always start with a bill from a member of the minority, and we will do that next week when we first start taking up ordinary bills. This one, as members know, is on a little bit more rapid path. It'll still be a deliberative one, but it needs to make 7 or 8 or 10 committee stops, and it needs to be acted upon and signed into law no later than March 31st in order to comply with federal deadlines. I am going to do my best, members, because I mostly want to hear from people who have comments or questions about the bill. So I'm going to do a fairly rapid walkthrough. I'm going to hit on a few high points, but I expect my presentation to be complete in 10 to 15 minutes and then spend most of the time just hearing from members and folks that have concerns or questions about the bill. I know that most of you have read the bill, so I'm going to move through it fairly rapidly. There's a few high points that I want to make. First is what this is. It is an online competitive marketplace where small businesses, individuals, and entrepreneurs can go to shop for health insurance on an apples-to-apples comparison, seeking out plans that meet their needs and that are affordable and provide quality health plans for them. If we don't do this, and I think just about everybody in the room knows this, if we fail to do this and do a state marketplace, the federal government will do it to us or for us, depending on your perspective. And they will do a lesser product at a higher cost. Under current estimates, that cost is in the neighborhood of up to 55% higher if the federal government does it for us. Moreover, in Minnesota, we're quite proud of the healthcare system, the delivery system, the health insurers that we have operating here in Minnesota. We are looked to from the rest of the country as a model for how to do business and how to deliver healthcare, and to allow that to be handed off to the federal government, I don't think is in the best interest of Minnesota consumers, patients, or providers. Third point is that by doing a state marketplace, we provide access to federal health care tax credits that are otherwise not available to entrepreneurs, individuals who purchase their health insurance through the marketplace. This marketplace, according to a health economist that from MIT, who's done the background study, will save the average Minnesota family $490 a year. In addition to saving the average Minnesota family $490 a year, it will save some families in the neighborhood of $1,800 a year. There are 1.3 million Minnesotans who are anticipated to purchase their health insurance through this statewide health insurance marketplace. That's one out of every four families, or one out of every four individuals in Minnesota is expected to purchase their health insurance through this. For small businesses, the anticipated savings as a result of not having to pay the MCHA assessment is in excess of $150 million a year, plus the anticipated reduction in premiums of 7.5% annually. In addition to that, because this is federally mandated, Minnesota has been awarded three federal grants totaling $110 million to aid in the setup and initial operations of the marketplace. I'll have a handout. I believe the handout is now in your folders with a summary of the finances where we've been through already. Built into this legislation is considerable oversight. There should also be a handout in your, literally a page long, defining what the oversight is, both by the federal folks, but more importantly, in my opinion, by the state of Minnesota, not just the legislature and elected officials, but also by the Departments of Commerce and Health and others, and it's also subject to review by the legislative auditor. The final 2 points, the anticipated number of currently uninsured Minnesotans who will gain health insurance as a result of this is 300,000. 300,000 people who currently do not have health insurance will be covered under this plan. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to do a relatively rapid walkthrough of the bill itself. The first portion is fairly clear. That's definitions. Next, on page 2, you've got sections 4 and 5 that are predominantly for the state and local government. They deal with creation of the board and the board's composition. And it sets out conflict of interest standards, open meeting application of the open meeting law, and other items that, again, primarily will be within the jurisdiction of the state and local government. Not that I'm looking to not answer any questions in here. I'd be happy to answer any questions that members have. But section 5 is the board itself and the membership of that board. It's a 7-member board. With considerable discretion exercised by the legislature, Speaker of the House, Leader of the Senate, and Governor in making those appointments, as well as Commissioner of Human Services or their designee, speaks to the terms of those serving on the board, talks about conflict of interest. Compensation is also, this is now turning to page 5, at the standard $55 a meeting rate. Responsibilities and powers of the Minnesota insurance marketplace. This is where I anticipate the vast majority of discussion this committee will focus on is in section 6 and section 7, talking about how the marketplace will actually operate and the powers that they have, and the cost. I'll point you specifically to line 6.21. This is one of the distinctions between the Minnesota state marketplace and what the federal folks would do. In Minnesota, we have put into the operations up to a 3.5% withhold from the amount that's paid in premiums that would go to operate the health insurance marketplace. In the federal plan, it is 3.5%. The last figures that I saw from the exchange staff, and they are here to answer questions as well, would be in the neighborhood of 1% to 1.5% lower in Minnesota if we run our own, as opposed to the 3.5% that's plugged in as an automatic within the federal exchange. In subdivision 3, this is on line 6.29 and below that, are portions that apply to the agents and brokers and how they're compensated. Currently, in the language of the bill, that would be through the plan or through the exchange. There will be an amendment shortly, and I'll talk about that would change that portion of the legislation. So I'll come back to that piece, Madam Chair. From line 7.18 and below, talks about the Navigator program. These are the folks that can sit down and help a person work their way through their purchase of health insurance in this online marketplace. On page 8, is some of the requirements for the health plans to sell products within the exchange, the standards that they would need to meet in order to be able to sell plans. Next is from lines 8.30 and below, agreements and consultation for information technology, for things that they would work through with the Department of Human Services, the Department of Commerce in terms of the operation of the plan. Section 7 is relative to data privacy. I would anticipate the Civil Law Committee will want to visit with us significantly about that. Funds in Section 8, lines 9.31 and below is the funds are placed into a dedicated account, not mixed with other funds. Section 9 on lines 10.3 is a report to the legislature. Section 10 is that the marketplace doesn't sunset unless the legislature were to statutorily sunset it. Section 11 on line 10.13 is a transfer of authority from MMB to the marketplace itself. Section 12 is a sunset of the MCHA and the MCHA assessment, which will no longer be necessary, and Section 13 is the effective date. With that, Madam Chair, I hope, in fact, it's 4:17. I think I kept to my my 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
There are several handouts within your packets relative to oversight, relative to the there should be a packet like this of the grants that have been awarded and where the money's gone. I believe there's one other, and that is we are not alone in Minnesota. Other states have also been awarded grants by the federal government. And to put it in perspective of where Minnesota is relative to other states. With that, Madam Chair, I would be happy to stand for any questions, but I would just as soon hear from folks in the audience who came here to testify about the bill so that we can find out what their questions and concerns are. One final point, though, is that we have seven or eight committee stops, so if you're not available today to testify, there will be other places where folks will be able to have an opportunity to be heard. We also have a walkthrough session on Thursday at noon where we're going to do a more thorough review of the bill with the exchange staff for any questions. So if you don't get all your questions answered today, there's going to be plenty of additional opportunities to do that as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. And Representative Davids has a question. Representative Davids, to your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, you made the comments that 300,000 more people would be getting coverage because of the exchange and this family should be saving $1,800 a year. I think we learned from the Affordable Care Act that we were told that the cost would go down $2,000 per family. And it actually went up $3,000 per family. We just had a report that health insurance costs in Minnesota will be going up about 50% this year. And through rate compression, somebody that's young is going to pay the same rate as somebody that's old like me. And so for younger folks, their rates are going to skyrocket. What data are you basing your 300,000 more people and they're going to save $1,800 per year per family? Where does that come from?
There's two. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Davids. There's two things that I would point you to. One is common sense. And I know you and I like common sense, and that is if we have a more competitive, robust online marketplace where people can actually shop for their health insurance, something that my little law firm in South St. Paul's has wanted desperately to do for years, we sort of feel like we're captured or captive to the health plans, and we don't really get an opportunity to compare them very much. And I think a lot of business folks and entrepreneurs and individuals have that same feeling. If they can go to an online, competitive, apples-to-apples marketplace, not just the federal tax credits that are available there that they can access, but just to have a good, competitive marketplace, that will drive up quality, drive down prices. Secondly, is the number that you referenced didn't come from me. It came from MIT economist Dr. John Gruber, who's written extensively, and it's his data.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, could I see that report? I'd like to see that. Is that available?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davids, we've got the summary that was presented to the task force, and by the way, thank you for reminding me of the task force. I would be remiss if I did not, for the last many, many months, members of the task force on this issue have been meeting and putting together their recommendations, and it's their recommendations in large part that are recognized in the bill. We will get you a copy of the report and every last detail of that report.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. I'm just very, very concerned, and I appreciate that. I'll be very interested in seeing that report, but I just don't see where. For example, you mentioned that you'd have more choices. If you live, you live in the metro area. I live out in God's country. And out in God's country, we have a choice of about one carrier. And so there's really not going to be any choice. If you're not Blue Cross, then you're not out there. So how would the exchange help me get all sorts of choices out in the middle of Fillmore County?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we can't make up more choices. Currently in the market right now, the exchange is not going to provide for more plans. It's not going to provide for more products necessarily. The exchange is just an opportunity to bring everything together in a single place where you have an opportunity to do some shopping. And right now, we don't really have that opportunity. I would suggest, though, it's a concern that you raised in terms of rural parts of Minnesota that don't have as many options. I was just visiting with a group this morning about that very topic, and that goes beyond what we can hope to remedy relative to an exchange. And I very much appreciate the concern that you have, and I share your concern.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Atkins, would you like to go to your amendment, the A-16?
I would, Madam Chair. I would offer the A-16 amendment. Members, that's in your folders or has been passed out to you. This deals with agent broker compensation. There was, in the bill itself, Madam Chair, it's currently compensated via the plan. In order to streamline the operations of the health insurance marketplace, we've opted to remain with the traditional compensation under which agents and brokers who sell plans are compensated from the plans themselves, but with some reporting requirements. I appreciate, by the way, Dominic Esposito and Tim Wilkin, who represent the agents, have done, I think, yeoman work in helping to prepare this draft to make sure that it would be in a workable fashion for the agents and brokers. Furthermore, I expect to continue working with the agents and brokers as they have concerns that may arise. But it's important to go through this. There's the first part of it is dealing with the training requirements that the agents and brokers would have. That came directly from the agents themselves. The second is the producer compensation would be the same inside and outside the exchange. Section C is reporting of what that compensation is, just to verify that it's the same inside and outside the exchange. Section D is that there'd be no disincentive to making available defined contribution type of group health benefit plans. And the fifth item on there, I should say, is that the producer offer health benefit plans for the Minnesota insurance marketplace. Just disclose if they are captive to a particular company or which companies that they work for. That's what the amendment does. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Atkins moves the A-16 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment?
Question.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, does this language prevent a broker from steering a consumer to a particular health plan? Or it's my first time in commerce and my first venture into health.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Steering is a term around this place that has gotten kind of a bad nomenclature to it. There's nothing wrong with agents and brokers guiding people and giving them advice on what they ought to buy. This would just simply ensure that the consumer has adequate information for making a decision. For example, I would point you to the fact that if a broker or agent works just for a particular health insurance company, that would need to be disclosed. It also requires disclosure of what the compensation is. All of which, you know, if you were to ask your broker or agent right now, I'm sure that they'd disclose to you anyway. But I would, part of the point of having an agent or broker is to have their guidance and their professional judgment and counsel to guide you to a plan that makes sense for you, your employees, and is also affordable and meets your needs.
Any other discussion to the amendment, members? If not, all in favor of the amendment, do so by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, members, we do have about a dozen or 15 testifiers. Representative Atkins, would you care to go to the testifiers? Could we do that now?
Please.
And have them come down?
Madam Chair?
Yes. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, based on the time, and I want to get as much testimony from the public that's going to be saddled with this $50 million website as possible, but are we going to have as committee members an opportunity to ask as many questions as we have? Because based on just the basics of the bill, I have a lot more questions than 12 testifiers. My experience has been that'll probably take up a good half hour, 45 minutes of our hearing time. So, and it's my understanding, either you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, that we're going to vote on this today?
Representative Zellers, that is correct. We are going to vote on this today, and we are giving the testifiers, a dozen of them, 3 minutes apiece, and I was about to give the process here that I like to chair and the way I like to have the testifiers come down, and they would be have to be succinct in 3 minutes, and we could get through the testifiers, and then we would have questions from the committee, and the testifiers could continue to stay to answer some of those questions, or we could continue to discuss this bill with the author himself.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So if the testifiers would line up and start to come to the table, I would like to call the first testifier is April Todd Momlove from the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange.
And Madam Chair, this is how efficient we're moving, Representative Zellers. Ms. Todd Momlove is executive director or something with the exchange. She's here to answer any questions or concerns once we get through the testimony.
Then we will.
So one down.
Okay, good. We're down to Michelle Kimball from AARP. Is Michelle Kimball here? And after that will be Liz Doyle from Take Action Minnesota. You can get on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
State your name and continue with your testimony, please.
Yes, I am Michelle Kimball, Director of AARP in Minnesota. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I especially want to thank Representative Atkins for your leadership in bringing this important piece of legislation forward. As you may know, AARP represents nearly 700,000 consumers across the state, 44% of whom are between the ages of 50 and 64. And it is precisely this age group which has had difficulty finding access to affordable health care. The establishment of the Health Insurance Exchange is a new opportunity to extend health coverage to these individuals, and not only for those that are currently without insurance, but also those who are who also have private insurance or are in the small group market and need more affordable coverage. Thus, AARP has had a very strong interest in the establishment of this important health insurance exchange, and we want to ensure that it is consumer-friendly and provides access to quality, affordable coverage that consumers truly need. AARP does believe that consumers will be best served by the creation of an exchange that is large enough to alter the health insurance marketplace and strong enough to foster active negotiation within the plans. This is the same approach that large employers use to obtain maximum benefits of affordable rates and the same approach used by the Veterans Administration to negotiate lower drug prices. A good example of why this is important can actually be found in the Medicare program. While the VA can negotiate, Medicare is prohibited from doing so and is spending more than it needs because it does not currently have the ability to negotiate for lower drug prices. This results in an estimated expenditure of billions of dollars more each year than the VA. Let's not make that same mistake with the exchange. A public opinion poll conducted by AARP in Minnesota last year showed broad support for a state-designed health insurance exchange that can negotiate on behalf of consumers to obtain more affordable health insurance. We have included a copy of this survey with our testimony today. You should have a copy of that in front of you. And while AARP does, in fact, support a robust exchange with competing plans, we also support the language in House File 5 that allows the exchange to select and offer a manageable number of affordable quality health plans. We are actually concerned that if too many plans are allowed to participate in the exchange, it actually could be difficult for consumers to make an informed choice and to easily compare the plans. And to this end, consumers will clearly need, of course, concise comparative information on the costs, the quality, and service of the options offered. Therefore, AARP supports language in the bill that envisions a role for both navigators and insurance brokers. We are, of course, interested in seeing a little more clarification on how the financing for the navigators and the brokers will work. And, of course, we are a little concerned that if brokers were paid by the insurance plans, that such a relationship could stir individuals toward a product that might be best for the plan, but is not necessarily best for the consumer. But we trust that the amendment that has just passed will alleviate that concern. In conclusion, a very strong outreach program to educate the public, about a manageable number of affordable quality health plans combined with the authority of the exchange to negotiate on behalf of consumers will help individuals and small employers obtain the health insurance coverage they so desperately need. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I am available to answer any questions.
And thank you for your testimony. If you just want to remain seated, we have a couple of questions from some members. Representative David?
Thank you. And to the testifier, I'm quite confused here. Representative Atkins just said it'll have more companies in there for more competition to save more money. You just said you want this exchange board to be able to eliminate companies that they don't want in there. Did I hear that right?
Madam Chair?
Kimball. Ms. Kimball?
Yes. No, sir. Actually, what I am referring to is having a manageable number of plans. I will give you an excellent example. Drug insurance companies under the Medicare program that are allowed to operate in the state of Minnesota, initially when that was created, there were more than 60 plus plans. That created a great deal of confusion for consumers in trying to figure out which plan was best for them. What we are saying is to just keep it at a manageable number in order for people to be able to adequately compare the plans and make the best choice that is in their best interest.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for the testifier. What is that number? How many plans make it manageable, number one? Number two, why do we even have a Commerce Department in this state if the Exchange Board can pick companies that can be in? I mean, why do we even have the Commerce Department? Is there a place for the Commerce Department in this? I would say that before I could vote for any bill, it'll be the Commerce Department that decides what companies are in any exchange, not the exchange. The Commerce Department has the expertise as to who should be writing health insurance in the state, not some exchange that doesn't even exist yet. So I think it's very, very problematic that we're going over the authority of the Commerce Department and having the exchange making way too many decisions here. So what is the number? How many? What's the right number according to AARP, number one? And number two, what's the role? Can the Exchange Board override the Commerce Department decisions on who can participate?
Ms. Kimball.
Madam Chair, thank you. We are not advocating to eliminate the role of the Commerce Department. We believe that the Commerce Department has a very important role in working closely to help establish the appropriate insurance plans within that are being offered through the insurance exchange and continue to ensure the plans that are being offered operate in an appropriate manner and that any type of waste or fraud or concerns on behalf of the consumers are adequately addressed. We do not have a clear number for exactly how many plans should be in the exchange. We are just asking to ensure that there is clarity, that the plans that are in fact offered in the state are competitive, of the highest quality, and provide the greatest benefit to the consumer at the most affordable rate. And whatever that number may be, we will certainly consider.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, in the bill there's no rulemaking authority. So how would the exchange make the rules as to what companies could participate? And in the current, the bill the way it is now, could the Exchange Board overrule the Commerce Department?
Ms. Kimball.
I don't have an answer for that, sir.
Thank you.
And members, let's.
I do.
Representative David, is that it, Nan?
Yep.
I know that we do have a couple of other members who do have questions, and could we hold those questions until after we go through the testifiers so we can get through the testifiers so we have time for the questions?
Well, Madam Chair, will testifiers be coming back, and will we still remember all the questions?
Well, I've asked the testifiers to remain for the questioning period after the testifiers have completed their testimony, so I believe they will be. Thank you, Ms. Kimball. And the
Thank
next
you,
testifier.
Madam Chair.
That we.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Yes.
Hi.
Representative Anderson.
I just know for me personally, it would be much more useful for me in the decision-making process if I was able to ask the question of the testifiers as it's fresh. And I also think it's more beneficial to the public as well, because it's not just us that we're trying to get this information for. It's also the public that is trying to get this information too. And especially if they didn't tune in this part of the a process and then come later into it and then hear the question, it might not jive. I'm just, for the flow of things, that might be helpful.
Well, I think that, Representative Anderson, I think that's a good suggestion. However, we do have about 11 more testifiers, and I think we can get through them, 3 minutes apiece, and we should all be able to remember and call them back. If you would
Madam Chair,
grant me that that levity in the process here that we have today for this hearing.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just a little concerned that we seem to be kind of rushing through this, and I'm concerned that we're rushing through something that is basically going to change our entire insurance structure in the state of Minnesota. And I hope that we're not doing it just for the sake of getting through a timetable.
Not at all.
So that's my concern. It seems like we're just rushing for the sake of rushing and not actually being thoughtful about the process.
Representative Anderson, we're being very thoughtful, and I take that into consideration. I think that we are all able to remember the testifiers and what they have had to say, and I've asked them all to stay so we can bring them back to the table. So I think we will continue with the process that's in place. And with the next testifier, Ms. Doyle, please come to the table. And the testifier that's after that can get on deck, and that would be Chris Schneeman from the Agents Coalition. Welcome, Ms. Doyle from Take Action Minnesota.
Hi, thank you.
State your name and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Liz Doyle, Associate Director at Take Action Minnesota. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I also want to thank Representative Atkins for his leadership in designing this health exchange legislation. This legislation, the health exchange in the state, really has tremendous opportunity to offer more affordable coverage for over 1 million people in the state, both individuals and small employers. It's coming online at a time when the cost of health care is going up really dramatically, and that's happening in particular in the individual and small group market. In the individual and small group market, the cost of health insurance premiums have outpaced inflation for over a year. And the out-of-pocket costs for plans in the individual and small group market have also risen dramatically, while the cost of the plans have also gone up. So for our families in the small group market, a third of them now have out-of-pocket limits that exceed $6,000 a year. Two-thirds of families in the individual market have out-of-pocket costs that exceed $6,000 a year. So we're seeing both the cost of health coverage go up and the out-of-pocket costs go up at the same time for individuals and small groups. It's a huge cost issue in our state. So we really appreciate the fact that this bill acknowledges the importance of having an exchange that can negotiate on behalf of consumers. Large employers and large purchasers in the state have long enjoyed the ability to negotiate for a better deal in the healthcare market. And the exchange can finally level this playing field for individuals and small businesses, giving them a chance to also strike a better deal in the healthcare market. We appreciate that the ability of the exchange to negotiate on behalf of consumers, as you'll see in the poll information that AARP distributed, is something that is very popular across the board in Minnesota as one of the strongest features of a health insurance exchange. We also commend the bill author for establishing an exchange board that can operate free of financial conflicts of interest. Under the Affordable Care Act, the exchange is required to ensure that all products meet both the federal minimum requirements and are in the best interest of Minnesota consumers. Given that, it is not reasonable to expect that an entity that also sells products on the exchange can make an unbiased and reasonable determination of which products are also in the best interest of the consumers in Minnesota. An exchange board that would contain any financial conflict of interest would be crippled in its ability to fulfill the role of safeguarding and shepherding the well-being and the interests of consumers in the state. So I want to again commend the bill author for legislation that includes an exchange board that can operate free of financial conflict of interest. Finally, I would just briefly address the importance of the Navigator program. As Representative Atkins mentioned, 300,000 people who are going to be eligible for coverage on the health insurance exchange are currently uninsured. There are a lot of barriers that we have that people will struggle to successfully enroll in the exchange. You may not have a computer, you may not have a consistent address, you may not be familiar with the process of purchasing health coverage. The Navigator program is intended to resource organizations around the state who have trusted relationships with low-income individuals, with people who are going to struggle to get on the health exchange successfully, resourcing that program and those organizations to be able to help with enrollment in both public and private coverage is going to be very important for both the well-being of individuals who are going to be eligible for exchange coverage as well as for the viability of the exchange. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify and to Representative Atkins for the legislation he's brought forward.
Thank you for your testimony.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Over here. Yeah. No offense I appreciate that we want to keep moving this along, but these broad generalizations that the health exchange is going to save money and that it's going to eliminate all these costs and drive down costs, again, as we're going through the process, how? How? I mean, if we're going to spend $15 million a year, at least, it's a 2%, at least, up to 3.5%. I'm just curious Miss Doyle makes the assertion that this is going to save Minnesotans money. If there's going to be call it a premium, call it a tax, call it whatever you want, a fee, how is that going to say? And if the $95 penalty is a lot cheaper than paying for insurance year-round, if you're an industrious young person who is very healthy, why wouldn't you just forget about buying insurance? And the way insurance works, the more you're in this pool, the easier it is to keep the cost low. I'm just curious as to the proof of the assertion. She can say all the nice things about Representative Atkins bringing the bill forward, but if you're going to make the assertion from an insurance standpoint, which is why we're having this bill in front of us, I'm just curious as to some facts, Madam Chair.
And Representative Zellers, those are all very good questions that all of us, and myself included, have heard time and time again and have heard some good answers to that. And if you will continue to listen to the committee and get to the end of the committee where we will bring up, we have some folks that are working, on the exchange, from the exchange, that could answer more specifically those questions that you've got. So please keep those ready to go. So let's go through the testifiers. There are many generalizations that we're going to hear from a lot of these testifiers. That's not unusual. They're coming forth to testify. We can address those, and we can have the expert at the table to answer those at the end of the hearing.
Well, and I appreciate and do. That's absolutely probably going to be your assertion and your goal, Madam Chair. I'll remain judgment of whether or not we actually have that by the time we leave here today. I'm doubtful, very doubtful.
The next testifier, Chris Schneeman from Agents Coalition, would you please be seated and please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members, Representative Atkins. My name is Chris Schneeman, and I own an independent insurance agency with 10 employees here in St. Paul. It's called Seven Hills Benefit Partners, where we assist over 200 small employers and several thousand individual policyholders in managing their health insurance options. I'm here today representing the Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform. This is a coalition comprised of the four professional agent associations in the state of Minnesota, including the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, the Professional Insurance Agents, and the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers. Mm-hmm. Collectively, we represent over 54,000 Minnesota licensed professional insurance agents and their employees. As such, we work closely with both group and individual market consumers on a daily basis. Agents have supported and continue to encourage an insurance exchange that supports the unique Minnesota healthcare system and competitive insurance market. Our members have spent countless hours participating in Governor Dayton's Health Insurance Exchange Task Force and the various working groups that are part of that task force. First, I'd like to start off by thanking Representative Atkins for working with us to eliminate the portion of the bill that addresses agent compensation. While we understand the original intent of the language better, we think that it would have been detrimental to a consumer's long-term access to professional advice, and we're grateful that it's been removed. This addresses about 90% of the concerns on the compensation topic, and we look forward to making this amendment workable in its final form. So thank you for that. We do have some other concerns about the bill at large. Number one, we're concerned that while most task force members supported a public-private partnership for the exchange, this bill sets the exchange up as a public agency or board, leaving no real private sector elements. While it has been stated that this is due to a need to have a state agency complete Medicaid eligibility determinations, we see ample evidence in other states that it is possible for an exchange to be modeled after our MCHA program and to delegate the Medicaid eligibility duty to DHS and our counties. Number two, we're concerned that the exchange may include types of products beyond those that are required by the Affordable Care Act, specifically that adult dental products would be included by the definition. We'd also like to see a prohibition of products other than health and pediatric dental to be included in the bill so that it is clear that the legislature does not intend for our exchange to invade other areas of the private insurance marketplace. Third, we're concerned that the exchange is exempt from the rulemaking process and would be able to make many important decisions without public input. It also lacks the kind of appeal remedies generally available through the administrative hearing process. We favor the same type of time-tested accountability that our Department of Commerce has with its current regulations of the health insurance market. Third, we are concerned that the funding mechanism will add 3.5% on top of premiums that will already be increasing due to changes required elsewhere in the federal law. This 3.5% increase will be felt both inside the market and due to the affordable care requirements, the products sold inside and outside the exchange have the same premium. It will be felt by those who do not use the exchange as well. The fact is that we live in one of the country's most competitive and efficient states, and if this 3.5% increase does not come from higher premiums, it would need to come from lower reimbursements to our doctors and hospitals. Last, our most serious remaining concern is about the active purchaser model. As representatives of both individual and group consumers, we do not believe that consumers in our market will welcome the Exchange Board deciding what products are best for them and which product innovations will not be available. Please understand that once the market inside the exchange is limited, the exchange will move to limit the choices for your constituents in the market outside of the exchange as well. Remember, President Obama, in passing the Affordable Care Act, spoke often about choice and competition. We agree with that statement and feel that the exchange needs to encourage both choice and competition. We encourage you to amend the bill to allow for an open market. Only in an open market that accepts any willing health plan will consumers be able to find health insurance that meets their diverse needs. We look forward to continuing to work with Representative Atkins and appreciate the difficult job that he has in bringing consensus to the issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Catherine Commit is up from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And the next, after Catherine Commit, we are going to have Kate Johansson. If you could get on board, please. Ms. Commit, go ahead and state your name for the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 5. My name is Catherine Commit, and I'm the Director of Policy and Government Affairs for the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The council is the trade association that represents Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. My members and I appreciate all of the work and leadership Representative Atkins is providing on this important legislation. The Council of Health Plans has always supported universal coverage for Minnesotans, and we also support the creation of a state-based health insurance exchange. The Council believes in focusing on three primary principles. First, create an exchange that works for Minnesota. Second, be mindful of affordability for all Minnesotans, particularly for those who purchase products through the exchange. And third, focus on meeting the minimum federal requirements so the state has a chance to get the exchange up and running this year. We have several concerns we'd like to share with you today. First, we are concerned about the composition of the board of directors in the bill. Federal regulations expressly state that the exchange board must ensure that a majority of the voting members on its governing board have relevant experience in health benefits administration, health care finance, health plan purchasing, health care delivery system administration, public health, or health policy issues related to the small group insurance and individual markets and the uninsured. However, as written, House File 5 does not require board members to have relevant experience as required by federal regulations. The health plans are not the only ones concerned about this issue. Members of the Governor's Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force are also concerned that this language excludes individuals with current relevant experience from serving on the board. Minnesota's nonprofit health plans, have a great deal of experience in providing health insurance coverage to Minnesotans. individually and collectively, the health plans have served the state exceptionally well. As nonprofits, each health plan has a mission to most effectively cover the health needs of the populations they serve. Members of the Governor's Health Exchange Advisory Task Force have suggested the governance of the exchange be structured as a public-private partnership with accountability to a state agency, not a state board, as outlined in the legislation. We believe the exchange board should be overseen by a state agency such as Commerce to have some public accountability. That leads me to another major concern, the lack of transparency and oversight. The health plans would like to see the board and the exchange have a greater level of accountability to the public. For example, House File 5 exempts the exchange from existing state rulemaking processes and procedures. We understand the need for the board to have an expedited process to implement the rules and policies necessary to be operational by October 1st of this year. However, there must be some level of accountability to the public in these initial decisions and an opportunity for public input before key decisions are made. We also do not believe that an expedited process or exemption from state rulemaking procedures is necessary beyond this initial time frame for when the exchange must be operational. Without rulemaking authority, it is unclear if the policies and procedures issued by the exchange would have the same status as rules without being promulgated under the statute governing rules. If the policies and procedures aren't properly promulgated, then these can easily be challenged in court. We think a more open and transparent process for consumers and the health plans is necessary to ensure that the long-term public trust in the exchange is there for the public and the board of directors. Another big concern is that all decisions about which health insurance plans participate in the exchange are left entirely up to the board. Some have suggested that having too many health plan options in the marketplace will be confusing to consumers. They are concerned it will be a repeat of what happened when the federal Medicare Part D prescription drug plan was enacted and hundreds of drug coverage plans were marketed to seniors. It is true that hundreds of Medicare drug plans, most of which were marketed by national multi-state companies, created confusion, and even some seniors were victimized by unscrupulous companies. However, the exchange has already anticipated and addressed this issue by developing a decision support tool that will help consumers shop for the coverage that is right for them. This tool will help consumers shop among the coverage options and streamline the decision-making process. A decision support tool was not available for consumers shopping for Medicare Part D coverage, which is one of the reasons why this argument has no correlation to the exchange. The exchange is different. Health insurance products cannot be offered through the exchange by just anybody. A health plan must meet a multitude of strict state and federal requirements. As such, we don't believe hundreds of health plans will flood the Minnesota market. We think it is most likely that it will be our existing Minnesota health plans plus the federally approved multi-state plans which are required to participate in any state's exchange. If the board doesn't allow for any health plan that qualifies to participate in the exchange, then the state must understand the possibility that health plans may choose not to make the investment to participate. Health plans need assurances that if they make the investment and become qualified health plans, they will be allowed to participate. So in our view, if a health plan is licensed and in good standing with its state regulators, and if a health plan is credentialed by the national credentialing organizations, and if a health plan meets the federal criteria to be a qualified health plan, then the health plan should be allowed to participate in the exchange. Without an open competitive marketplace, consumers cannot be assured they are getting the best product at the most affordable price. A competitive marketplace must entice both sellers and buyers to participate. When competition is forced or limited, it cannot be an open, truly competitive marketplace. In fact, the federally facilitated exchange has also made the decision to allow any qualified health plan to participate in the federal exchange. We believe that model would work well for Minnesota, too. Another major concern we have is making sure the exchange is ready for open enrollment on October 1, 2013. As I said at the outset, the health plans want the exchange to work. However, getting the IT systems up and running is an enormous challenge, both for the state as they create the new systems and for the health plans to be ready to connect with these new systems. IT readiness is perhaps the biggest problem for the exchange, and yet it is the least talked about. This is an enormous and expensive undertaking, and the exchange staff is still in the process of developing the IT system. If the exchange can't be supported by its IT system, it will not be operational. This is a real possibility. The key to making the exchange operational on time is to do what is minimally necessary to become operational. Features that are nice to have, but not vital to the operations of the exchange, can be added later on. The more complex we make the IT infrastructure now, the less likely we will be ready on time for the October 1st launch. Lastly, in terms of financing the exchange, we support using a funding mechanism that is as broad-based as possible. The Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force examined a number of possible funding mechanisms. All have pros and cons, but some are more broad-based than others. The current mechanism in the bill would apply only to the fully insured market, which represents about 25% of the state's population. Both the Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force and the Exchange Blueprint, which the state submitted to the federal government, prioritized equity and fairness in funding the exchange's ongoing operations. We support financing the exchange in the broadest way possible. Members of the committee, we want the exchange to work in Minnesota, but without some key amendments to this bill to address our concerns, it would be difficult for us to support House File 5 in its current form. What we need to do and what we are committed to doing is continuing to work with the authors of this legislation to create an exchange that works for Minnesota. We want the exchange to work. We want it to be affordable and simple to use. The governing board must have a majority of people with relevant experience who serve on the board so that the exchange can be successful. We need to focus on making sure products offered through the exchange are affordable. The exchange must result in more people with coverage, not fewer people. It should result in more people buying health insurance in the individual and small group market, not fewer. We must focus on meeting the minimum federal requirements only. To ensure the exchange is ready for October 1st, we need to do only what needs to be done. We don't have time, and we won't be ready if we try to do more than is necessary. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Could you remain for the rest of the committee's time? And we'll have the next testifier come up. Ms. Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in House File 5. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 business members that provide 500,000 jobs, and 80% of which are small businesses eligible for participation in a Minnesota health insurance exchange. The Chamber would also like to thank Representative Atkins for his hard work on this demanding and important issue and his collaboration with diverse stakeholders whom, as the past testimony may reveal, view an exchange more as a Rorschach test than a legally defined entity at the current moment. The Minnesota Chamber has long supported legislation to create a Minnesota health insurance exchange that empowers consumers by maximizing their choices. While we would find it difficult to support the bill in its current form, we do hope to continue working with Representative Atkins and others, and as he has stated many times, view this bill as a starting point, not an ending point. And with respect to the committee's time, I will not spend time focusing on things that have already been said, but the Chamber would reiterate the concerns noted by Mr. Schneeman and Ms. Commit. We have several provisions that concern us with respect to the board composition, rulemaking authority, scope of the board's authorities, oversight, and transparency. Thematically, the Chamber would respond with the suggestion that legislation should be pragmatic. The state should walk before it runs and focus on ACA compliance and functionality. With that in mind, there are a few issues that I would highlight for the committee's consideration. First, with respect to brokers, we think that the A16 amendment is a strong step in the right direction and appreciate Representative Atkins bringing that forward. Second, with respect to the finance mechanism, the 3.5% withhold does concern us because, as noted, 80% of our members are small businesses. This 3.5% withhold will be amortized over all small businesses, whether they choose to purchase insurance through the market, through the exchange or not. So this is something that will hit fully insured consumers who already pay higher prices than those who receive their insurance through other mechanisms. Third, we would look at marketplace regulation. The Chamber supports more of a marketplace facilitator model and would hope that legislation have the exchange board set standards for the exchange itself, but leave a market outside the exchange that is robust and not require participation and allow all products that meet exchange requirements to be sold within the exchange without further selection. While we appreciate the concept that many want to simplify this process for consumers, we think that a $41 million website, brokers, and other resources will help aid consumers who want assistance in choosing products better than limiting the number of choices they have. And with that said, I am happy to remain available for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Would Beth McMullen please come to the table? The next testifier. And after her, Bob Johnson on deck. And Mike Hickey on deck as well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth McMullen, and I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. We're an association of CEOs of Minnesota's largest employers. Our members employ 400,000 Minnesotans and over 4 million people worldwide. While the companies I represent generally self-insure in terms of employee health benefits and are too large to purchase through the exchange currently, we're interested in creating an exchange that will add value to the healthcare system in Minnesota. I appreciate Representative Atkins bringing us into the continuing conversations about this bill and how we can make it a better piece of legislation for all Minnesotans. We have, as the Chamber has supported an exchange for Minnesota by Minnesota for the last couple of years. We believe that the exchange should be market-based and patient-centered to deliver exceptional value to consumers, both in terms of cost and quality, but also providing plenty of choice for consumers. We understand that there's a tight timeline for implementation, and as has been iterated before, we think that the exchange should really focus on what is absolutely required, and we can work on perfecting this as we go along. I will not reiterate the concerns that have been addressed already, but just highlight where you've heard from the Council of Health Plans, the Chamber, some of the same concerns that we share around governance, including the type of entity that this is, the board composition, conflict of interest. We're also concerned about the accountability of this, what is essentially a newly created state agency. We also share the concerns on plan participation and selection. I would end with my final comments being on the financing and the cost of this exchange. We do believe that in Minnesota we can do things better, and I believe that as well. It's not enough, though, just to say that we're going to be less expensive than the federal exchange would be if we opted for that. We need to determine what it is that this exchange needs to deliver to consumers, what the value of that is, and then we can set kind of what we're willing to pay for it. I'd also note that, as has been stated, the exchange has received over $100 million in grants for startup and operations beginning. I think we need to look very carefully at what is actually needed in the beginning. Is it covered by the federal grants? And I understand there's cash flow issues, and we need, as part of the ACA, you need to ensure that it has operating funds. But we need to be very, very careful about how we set up that cost and financing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Bob Johnson, Minnesota Insurance Federation. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I'm just going to make maybe two or three points, Madam Chair and committee members, because I know the concerns that you have heard from Ms. Kmit and Ms. Johansson and Mr. Schneeman, surely we share most of those same concerns, so I won't be repetitive. Our association, the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, we do support the creation of a state health insurance exchange, first point. The second point, maybe just to comment that I don't think much has been said about, although the Representative Atkins did talk about the focus in Section 6, but this exchange is going to service one out of four Minnesotans, something like that. So a fourth of the population, that means 75% of the population is going to be outside of the exchange. I guess I just want to comment on the vital importance of keeping a healthy, competitive marketplace outside of the exchange. There's some language in the bill in Section 6, Subdivision 5, I think that's intended to do that. I guess I would just urge and underscore that that language be clear, that the market outside of the exchange, frankly, be maybe kept the way it is. It will be subject, obviously, as the entire market is, to all of the insurance reforms under the Affordable Care Act and all of the other changes that are coming on board through the rest of this year. But I think it's very important to keep a clear kind of demarcation between the exchange market and however it ultimately ends up, and then the rest of the market that's going to serve probably 75% of Minnesotans. So I think the language in the bill, it surely is, looks like it's tended to that way, but I guess I would just urge that it's vitally important that it be clear that that's the case. And just the last point, Madam Chair and committee members, I think on the operation funding issue, I just, as I'm sitting here kind of listening to this debate, and people referencing EMCHA, and we're talking about funding, and we're talking about what's a fair, equitable way to try to fund this. Clearly, new money is going to be needed to fund the exchange, whatever that is, $50 million or $55 or $60, whatever that number is. So we need new money to fund it. The way the bill is drafted, it calls for a charge, an assessment, a tax. I'm not quite certain. It talks about retaining up to 3.5% of premiums. I just think from, as I look at it, you know, we have an EMCHA mechanism in place today, and how we fund it is unfair. It is inequitable. It is not good public policy. I don't think anybody disputes that. We have a Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association that's serving a worthy goal. It's doing a good job, and we fund it on the backs of individuals and small employers. For 10 years of EMCHA operations, it was funded by the general revenue. That was a fair way to fund it because it benefits all of Minnesota. And, Madam Chair and committee members, I think this exchange is going to benefit all of Minnesota. That surely is the testimony. All of Minnesota is going to benefit. I guess I would just urge, this just doesn't seem like the right funding base to say it's going to be a retaining or a withholding of premiums. I believe that I'm not certain that that's actually even going to work, and for the following reason. We have under the Affordable Care Act what's called minimum loss ratios. So that's the law of the land. It's the law of the land in Minnesota. Under minimum loss ratios, every licensed company is required to pay out a percentage of the premium dollar in benefits. So that's mandated. So in the small group, in the individual market, under the Affordable Care Act, that is an 80% number. So that's the law of the land. It applies across the country unless the state has filed for some exception to that. Minnesota hasn't filed, so that's the law of the land at this state. In the large group, that's an 85% number. I'm having a hard time kind of reading through the bill and understanding. Is the up to 3.5, is it a premium tax? Is it an assessment? Is it intended? Because it's going to have to relate to and come back down to that minimum loss ratio. If it's not a premium tax, then that money, is it going to increase the loss ratio? Today it's 80. Does that make the loss ratio 83.5? If it makes it a higher loss ratio, that means there's fewer dollars to operate, and it may well have a chilling effect on interest and participation in the exchange. So I want to put before the committee the concerns and just urge, let's just make it a fair, equitable funding. It's benefiting all Minnesotans. Let's have a funding base that has all Minnesotans participate in it. So thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your testimony. And the next testifier is Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business. And the next on deck will be Dr. Robert Dice, Minnesota Physicians Patients Alliance, if you want to ready. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hickey.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We're the state's largest a small business group and also the largest business group in terms of entities, with about 13,000 members statewide and a significant member base in every district, and a group that's probably the most affected by state health insurance law and what goes on in the state-regulated market. We're very concerned about several of the provisions, opposed to one of the provisions, but I did want to thank Representative Atkins for his very open-door policy and his willingness to work with NFIB and other groups, and the several meetings we've had and possibly the other meetings we're going to have going forward. Our biggest concern about this legislation is just what Bob Johnson touched on, is the workability of this assessment. And it's not the intention of Representative Atkins to have this assessment be passed through to policyholders, but the workability of it is very concerning, and I think Bob Johnson just touched on it as concisely as you can. If it can't be passed through for the insurers, it's going to pose a real problem with loss ratios under the ACA. the workability of the of that provision and people's interest in being involved in this exchange, having to put forward a product that they're going to get 3.5% less than its cost, is a not very appealing proposition to most of the insurers. I'm not here to represent them or speak for them, but it's very concerning. And I think to you as policymakers, going forward, you want to have an exchange that's going to work, and one where, is, you know, the maximum number of insurers are going to want to participate, assuming they can meet the criteria. And this provision really raises some issues. If it somehow could be passed through due to another provision in the ACA, it likely then could also would have to be passed through to everybody in the outside market, outside the exchange, which is going to be the vast majority of NFIB members, which is going to be the vast majority of your constituents. We're hearing estimates of 10 to 30% of the people participating in the exchange. Maybe over a long period of time that number changes, but the vast majority aren't going to be participating in the exchange. And so if we get into a situation where it's it is a pass-through, then because products have to be priced similarly in the exchange and outside the exchange, the worst possible result we could have would be a 3.5% assessment on plans outside the exchange for people that probably will never use the exchange. And that would be a terrible outcome, and it's just something we're very concerned about, and urge Representative Atkins to try to look at other sources of funding and other ways to make this go beyond our first year of federal funding. We're also very concerned about my other concerns echo what's been said. I'm just going to go through them very quickly because I know you want to get on with your agenda here tonight, but very concerned about the provision that could really exclude a lot of insurers from the exchange. In our view, if a company meets the criteria and Ms. Commit laid out all that criteria, they should be included in the exchange. We want to have the most choice for the NFIB members, for the small business people we represent that do become involved in the exchange. We want them to have the maximum amount of choice, not a limited choice, decided by a board in ways that might concern a lot of us for their decision making. We also think the conflict of interest provision should be dropped. This exchange board is going to need people who have the know-how in the background in insurance. It's not everybody, but there should be a certain number of people on this board who do have significant knowledge of insurance. It's a federal requirement, actually, and the language we have now, we're very concerned that we're not going to meet that goal, and we could have an insurance exchange making decisions that none of us are going to be happy with in the long run. I really want to thank Representative Atkins for dropping the insurance agent provision. That was not workable in our judgment, and that really was a very anti-private market, and putting a provision in that will allow insurance agents to be compensated the way they are regularly in the insurance market is something we support. And finally, we think the exchange should be subject to the normal rulemaking authority and oversight that other state agencies are, not expedited normal rulemaking. It's a cumbersome process for any of you who have dealt with it. A lot of people don't get involved. It's hard to get people involved in it, but at least it should be there, and we should have that amount of oversight and that amount of light shined on the activities of the exchange. And so just wanted to share those comments with you, and thanks.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Hickey, for your testimony. Dr. Robert Geist is the next testifier, and after Dr. Geist will be John Tyler. And get ready. Welcome to the committee, Doctor. State your name for the
Madam
table.
Chair, Representative Atkins, and committee members, it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon with you. I'm Dr. Robert Geist. I was a physician in St. Paul for many years. I've been involved in medical politics for about 40 years, which almost exceeds my time I was in practice of medicine. I've now, therefore, since I retired, have become a patient, industry speak, that's called a consumer. So that's what I am, and I think most of us are like that here. Well, I want to talk to you today about quality as it relates to the exchange. And I did put my remarks on. I think they got passed around. You want to follow that. There are two possible models for the exchange, and they've been talked about already today. First one is the market competition or facilitative model, which be inclusive of all qualified health plans. And it would use a minimum of guidelines so that it would be open for all insurers. The other method of doing this is what I call political franchising or purchaser model, and that uses a prescriptive method for developing a qualified health plan. Now, this could result in prescribing the same old comfortable Medicaid oligopoly that we have here in managed care in Minnesota, and would including the impoverishment of the primary care services sector in Minnesota and also throughout the nation. The problem is that House File 5 seems to favor this particular one and chooses that model, and that's under lines 8.11 through 8.13. I'd recommend that that section be deleted and it be amended such that the Insurance Exchange Board is made to have the facilitator open model so that we have that competition that's called for, and that they accept all qualified health plans, and that they be prohibited actually from franchising only a few. Now, what's this got to do with quality of care, and how would this amendment make it better? And that has to do with what I would call the innovations of new products. The old way is to do it with the managed care product, which I've already alluded to. And the problems you're going to run into here is the federal regulations that came out last November, which kind of puts you in a box. The power of the health plans that we have dominant now is really enormous, and that's because they have sort of what I call a perverse power to control the use of the benefits they insure. There's no other casualty insurance company I know that can do that. And I said, what's curious about the managed care industry is that they ask us to judge them by their promises of cost control and quality. We keep hearing that. Yet after decades of dominance, neither claim is really true. Costs go up, quality is questioned. Excuse me. Now, we're now promised that if we transfer this gatekeeper role of the corporations to the doctors at the bedside, we have a new panacea, which is called payment reform, which I'm sure you've heard about, which means the bonuses paid to doctors if they restrict use of the corporate money. It's called savings. In other industries, it's called profits.
And Dr. Geist, I don't want to mean to interrupt you, but sure. We do have...
Am I going on too long?
We do have your testimony. This is very good, and we can refer to this, and I would like you to wrap it up in the next minute, please.
Okay, sure. There's a new way of doing things, which I think is better, and that is even their high deductible health plans, which works in the private sector, and something that might be considered with the regulations that are now constituted as they look at the federal regs. However, that's questionable. Finally, the realities out there in the clinical marketplace are difficult for physicians now, extremely difficult. And so I'd like to emphasize that I certainly agree with the first model other people seem to favor of having lots of qualified plans and lots of insurers. I think that's the best way to go, and I hope and wish you good luck in trying to get that done. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Doctor, for your testimony. I appreciate it. And the next up would be John Tyler from the Republican Healthcare Task Force. John? On deck after Mr. Tyler is Denny Nystrom, a citizen. And welcome to the committee, Mr. Tyler. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Tyler. I'm Vice Chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force. I would like to stress that I am speaking on behalf of the Republican Healthcare Task Force and not with regard to any other agent association or agents coalition that I'm also involved in. I have also served as the Vice Chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force back in the 1990s as well, from 92 to 1997 as well. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on House V7 as well. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on House File 5, the Insurance Marketplace Exchange Bill. My comments, I believe you have in front of you. You also have a copy of a recent article from the USA Today called Potential Obamacare Privacy Nightmare. Collecting personal data across government opens doors to abuse. I think it's an excellent segue into my comments, none of which have been addressed thus far. I think I would like to just paraphrase this, take a historical perspective of what is happening with the insurance exchange issue, and provide some, perhaps some insights because it ties into the exchange bill that, you know, that you have before you. In the 1990s, as vice chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force, our chief battle was against similar provisions of the Clinton Health Security Act. That failed 1993 legislation sought to establish a National Health Insurance System, or National Health Board. Section 5101 of that act stated, the National Health Board shall collect, report, and regulate the collection and dissemination of health care information. The Clinton Health Security Act would have required the board to, quote, oversee and compile and transmit information. The board, and there's been much comment about power of boards in this committee, the board was to establish a system to provide for a unique identifier number for each eligible individual, each employer, each health plan, and each health care provider. A health security card was to be issued to each individual, and without that card, no care. These were our chief reasons for the opposition of the Clinton Care Act in those days. It was not, it could not withstand the spotlight of public scrutiny then, and I believe was chiefly responsible for the ultimate Republican takeover of U.S. House of Representatives in 1994. The Clinton Health Security Act failed, but in 1996, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act mandated the creation of unique identifiers for, again, individuals, employers, doctors, hospitals, and insurers. So far, only the patient identifier has not been created, but it is in process. HIPAA eliminated all legal patient consent requirements for the sharing and use of private patient medical records. In 2004, President George W. Bush issued an executive order to build a national health information network. This is to tie together health information exchanges between integrated delivery networks, pharmacies, government, doctors, hospitals, into a, quote, network of networks. In 2009, President Obama turned President Bush's executive order into federal law in the Economic Recovery Stimulus Act, which included a section called the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act. This act gives between $27 and $36.5 billion to build the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, largely the funding source for the seed money for the health insurance exchanges that we see today. Its purpose is to tie together health information quote exchanges. It penalizes doctors that refuse to use computerized, linkable patient records by January 1, 2015. It has little to do with insurance purchasing and everything to do with exchanging patient insurance and health care information between the government and the private sector, thus the name exchange. It is an exchange of information between government entities. The 2010 Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act established the Independent Payment Advisory Board. This board has the power to determine health care treatment for millions on government programs, and arguably, upon full implementation of the PPACA, individuals that are privately insured using having purchased their coverage through an exchange. None of the above is possible without a state-by-state implementation of federally accountable information exchanges. History is very likely repeating itself in the bill before you. Please vote no to a Minnesota Healthcare Information Exchange, because without it, Minnesotans will not be part of a national healthcare database, a national takeover of healthcare, insurance, and much more. State exchanges open the door to federal government controls, permitting laws and rulemaking, and national tracking of health insurance status, healthcare data sharing, national registration for IRS enforcement of the individual mandate, and individual personal medical decision making. Nationalized health records paid for by the states, a centralized data hub. According to the accompanying USA Today article, every state exchange is a federal exchange that will be used to control the entire healthcare industry from insurers to doctors nationally. To quote the enclosed USA article, quote, by mid-December, the federal government is planning to quietly enact what could be the largest consolidation of personal data in the history of the republic. If you think identity theft is a problem now, wait until Uncle Sam serves up critical information on 300 million American citizens on a platter. Hyperbole? Unlikely. I would like to ask each of you, how many of you ran your campaigns on enacting a national effort to collect and retain personal health records, tax information, dates of birth, addresses, social security numbers, and more into a single consolidated location on every Minnesotan? How many of you believe that this you could be reelected once the truth of all this becomes known, that you'll be supported in this committee right here and right now? Did you stand up for Minnesotans' privacy by voting no when you had the opportunity, which you have today, or did you open the portal to federal intrusion into Minnesotans' private information by voting yes to House File 5? It is your legacy to leave and to defend. I invite you to read the potential Obamacare privacy nightmare article. I believe it is right on. I believe we are living in the shadow of Clinton Care right now. I think we're in the process of implementing phases of Clinton Care right now. I think this is much less about insurance purchasing as it is data collection and sharing between government agencies. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Tyler. We have a citizen, Danny Nystrom, that is here to testify, and I also have Laura Bell Peterson, Laura Lee Peterson. Are they here? And Jeannie Kellogg. Danny Nystrom, are you here? Laura Lee Peterson, come to the table, please. State your name for the tape and give us your testimony.
Laura Lee Peterson. As a mother of 8 children and a citizen of the state of Minnesota, I am opposed to the creation of a government exchange. This is a violation of both my freedom and my privacy. It is being called a marketplace, and yet this is a huge data sharing database to share our private medical information with the federal government. That is not like any marketplace that I have ever participated in. Untold amounts of information at untold times will be shared with unknown bureaucrats who will have untold power over my health care. What will they do with this information? The prospect is downright frightening. Whatever happened to privacy between a patient and her doctor? The cost will be enormous to create, maintain, and manage such a behemoth as this exchange. These costs will have an adverse impact on all Minnesotans. The exchanges will expand Medicaid and build up a middle class dependency. They will enable Affordable Care Act taxes and fines to be put in place that will hurt every family budget. This is a true infringement on my liberty and the liberties of every Minnesotan. This is government sticking its nose where it does not belong. I vehemently oppose the setting up of this exchange. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And Jeannie Kellogg is on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeannie Kellogg. I'm here as an individual. I'm an independent contractor. I buy my own health insurance. And in commerce, when we buy products, we're not required to blindly let unknown numbers of people keep our personal information, nor do we allow them to send our information back and forth to many government entities and third parties for their review, use, and distribution. But this exchange is a personal data exchange. It requires just that, our personal information to be distributed, published into the government sphere broadly and widely. And what is personal information in the health exchange? It is where you live, have lived, your family, your health records, appointments, your doctor's notes, your ailments, concerns, that of your spouse and your children, and in their private health history, some private things such as mental health concerns or behavioral patterns. That, and in short, your information is really you, and this data exchange of your story, your information. In normal commerce, unlike this bill, we don't allow people to stand on a corner with a megaphone and blast our information out to whoever was willing to receive it. And this exchange is saying okay to spread your story wherever and whenever within the government network and numerous third parties, very broadly defined, and you have no choice in that. We have learned the hard way the power of electronic exchange, and bills have been passed to protect you. People can't just blast and spread your story to whomever and wherever without your consent, without you knowing who they are, and without penalty for violation when that harms you. Bills like the Data Practices Acts were passed to protect you in this manner. This bill does not fall under those protections at all. Also, the exchange is a large IT project with project managers, contractors, programmers, business analysts, and so on. The project is already determined by IT professionals to be in the red zone. Maybe some people give it the grace to be a RELO, which is just IT jargon to say that it is not going to be finished on time, not finished well, not within budget, and just not according to plans. Last week at a testimony, the director gave a chart of what the graph of what the PowerPoint slide of all the data systems, departments, agencies, and people that are involved and have requirements into this tool.
It's lines going every which direction. It's like a plate of angel hair pasta. And this reminds me of so many projects of which I am familiar. It's like those Martha Stewart magazines that look so pretty, that pretty plate of pasta, but when actually done, it's not so pretty. In this case, it's like stuffing the pasta in, pouring pasta sauce in, forgetting the lid because we ran out of budget, and turning it on high speed because we ran out of time. This is at best a four-year project that we are trying to do in a short amount of time. That's like saying we're going to drive to California, stop in Iowa, and call it done. There is high risk to what that means for your personal information. Lastly, in this bill, there are big stakeholders within the medical and insurance industry whose financial success and financial gain are vested in the passing of an exchange. With big stakeholders creating the momentum on a national scale, it is difficult for us in Minnesota not to become a willing or accidental pawn in their behind-the-scenes hand and for their profit, narrowly for their advantage. Voting yes to an exchange is being a pawn in a very big profit game and gain. Our shared democratic ideals remind us that we have the ingenuity to do something better, to not be a pawn in Minnesota, and to come up with better solutions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We have on deck now Twyla Brace. If you'd please come to the table. Twyla? And after Ms. Brace, we have our two last testifiers, Ellie Heber and Keith Warner, who will come together if you want to get ready to come up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Twyla Braze. I am president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and we have long opposed the development of a health insurance exchange, and the longer this has gone on, the more concerned we are about what it really means, the more we have learned about what it really means. So, you know, the question really is, because this is commerce, committee, and the idea is that here what this exchange is going to do is to purchase health insurance. But what I'd like to bring to you is a new vision, given the technicalities of it, of what this exchange is. So the exchange is not Travelocity. It's not a marketplace. It's not a one-stop shopping place. What it is a huge IT superstructure. And more than that, it is a state in state name only, a federal website that is connected and part of and on the central server called the Federal Data Services Hub. And even in the contract with the state of Minnesota and Maximus, the company that has received $41 million to build it, in the contract it calls it a federal MinHIX, in other words, Federal Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. So it's a federal entity. And I concur with those who have been concerned about the privacy aspects of it and have mentioned the USA Today article, because that does indeed say that this is the largest consolidation of personal data in the history of the Republic. And they're talking about the hub. And the hub is what is going to have 50 websites on it, or maybe there'll be just 18 websites for those who say yes to the exchange, including Minnesota, plus one website for Washington, D.C., and then one website called the so-called Federal Exchange, which is just a federal portal with IT connections to all the state agencies in all the states that refuse to build an exchange. Because what an exchange really is just the IT connections from the state agencies 24/7, 365 days a year to the federal government through the Federal Data Services Hub.
Ms. Brace, I'm going to ask you to wind up your testimony. We have very little time left to ask questions from the committee as well. And if you could stay for questions, I'd appreciate it. But if you could wind up in the next minute.
Certainly. So all of you have gotten this little piece here, which actually gives you a schematic of what it looks like. And in the very center, you will see, because this is all information from the contract with Maximus and the state of Minnesota, in the center you will see the actual data from Exhibit D in the contract that is to be shared. So private, confidential, welfare, medical, non-public, health records, chemical health records, protected health records, electronic health records, federal tax information, a record according to the Federal Privacy Act, and other data. So above and beyond the fact that we're concerned about what the exchange really is as compared to what is being sold, we are also very concerned about the fact that it is exempt from so many state laws. Despite all this data sharing, this structure is exempt from the Minnesota Data Practices Act. I have heard that it might be different than that, but until it really says in there something other than that all the sharing is under the new law that's being created as opposed to Chapter 13, I will believe that it is exempt. It is also exempt from the rulemaking. And rulemaking is so key to figuring out what the structure is and giving the public a voice to protect themselves. So those are my comments, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about them. The one thing that I would add is that there is no need under federal law to create a state exchange, mm-hmm. and in fact, the federal government does not have the money to create a federal exchange, and even Politico has reported this and said they have to get creative to do it. And so it's really clear that we will not have a federal exchange imposed on us if we do not create a state exchange. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we have our two last testifiers who I believe will be coming up to the table together. And they are Ellie Beaver from the American Cancer Society and Keith Warner, also from the American Cancer Society. And welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Atkins. My name is Ellie Beaver, and I work for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. We support House File 5 in its current form because it sets up a consumer-friendly exchange and for many of the same reasons that Ms. Kimball and Ms. Doyle stated earlier. Not only do I support this bill professionally, but also personally. I'm a 30-year cancer survivor, and I've had trouble getting insurance in the past, as well as having payment for care denied because that was the decision the insurance company made. I'm grateful for the patient protections that the Affordable Care Act has given me. My husband is also a small business owner, and one day I might be able to work for his business as it grows, and the exchange allows a way for him to purchase insurance, both for his business and his employees, as well as for our family. I'd also like to introduce Keith Warner, one of our longtime ACS volunteers and an advocate for ACS CAN, who's going to tell you his story about how a consumer-friendly exchange would help him and his family.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. As she mentioned, my name is Keith Warner from White Bear Lake. I'm a longtime volunteer with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and I'm here today to talk about why health care exchange that protects consumers is so important to me and our family. We have five adult children. In 1998, our daughter Lori died from non-functioning islet cell cancer. She was 34 years old. Colon cancer also runs in our family. I was first diagnosed with colon cancer in 1969. I had a reoccurrence of colon cancer 25 years later in 1994. In 1996, I had prostate cancer. In 1998, I had sarcoma in my chest, and I've had other cancers since then. My sister, who also died from the disease, was diagnosed of colon cancer at age 41. My mother had colon cancer at age 54. Our son, Kevin, was just diagnosed with colon cancer this past November. In 2002, I decided to have a genetic testing done, which revealed that I carried a gene for Lynch syndrome, an inherited disorder that increases the risk of colon cancer before age 45. I had to pay for this testing out of pocket because my insurance wouldn't cover it. The lifetime risk of colon cancer for people with Lynch syndrome is 80%. Women with Lynch syndrome are likely also at increased risk of uterine, ovarian, and other cancers, and are suggested to have hysterectomies after childbearing is completed. I encouraged all family members to be tested for this gene or for this mutation, but not all of them wanted to. Our family did, but my extended family did not. Once you're diagnosed with Lynch syndrome, you must be vigilant with screening tests and often struggle to get insurance. 2006, our daughters Linda and Lisa both had genetic testing done at a cost around $800 each, which their insurance did not cover, and both found to be positive. Good thing about knowing that we carry the gene was that we know how to screen for the first signs of cancer with annual colonoscopies and even remove precancer polyps, avoiding the disease altogether. Linda, our oldest daughter, was diagnosed with colon cancer in 2011 and a year later diagnosed with kidney cancer due to vigilant screening, which caught both cases early. The bad part was their pre-existing condition prevented them from getting affordable health insurance. Lisa struggled the most with insurance. She's a stay-at-home mom, so her insurance coverage has been dependent on her husband's employer. They had employee-sponsored coverage in the past, but when her husband lost his job and his insurance, they could not afford COBRA and could not find affordable coverage on the private market. Thank goodness for the state insurance plan. For kids, this enabled them to get coverage for their two children, our grandchildren. Lisa's husband eventually found a job, but his employer did not offer insurance. Because of the income of that job, her children no longer qualified for SCHIP, and they made too much to qualify for Minnesota Care. Again, they turned to private market, where her husband and children were able to purchase policy with Health Partners. Because of her Lynch syndrome diagnosis, which is considered a pre-existing condition, the only insurance Lisa could find was a temporary policy, which includes a $10,000 deductible and does not cover the colonoscopy she needs annually. The price is $1,700. Once this expired, her only option was Minnesota CompreHealth, which with a monthly premium of $235 and a $5,000 deductible. Lisa is now 40 years old and has a lifetime of frustration and worry ahead of her, not only for her own health, but also for her children. Lynch syndrome goes down 50% in your family to each child. Since being diagnosed with Lynch syndrome, she has a colonoscopy every year and has had precancerous polyps removed each time. Had the polyps not been removed, they would more likely turn into cancer. She underwent a hysterectomy last year to prevent some of the cancers that Lynch syndrome has made her susceptible to. Today, her husband's job provides health insurance, and Lisa's family has the coverage they need. The Minnesota health insurance change must be built around the needs of consumers like my family. Because three of our five, I should say adult children, carry the Lynch syndrome gene, and we don't know if Lori had it when she died, we've had to deal with three adult children with cancer. Lisa was the only one not diagnosed with cancer, has had her care dictated by her insurance coverage, and she was often considered too high risk to cover, leaving her without access to the annual screening she needed to stay healthy. The way the exchange is structured, if this bill takes those decisions out of the hands of with financial interest and into the hands with the interests of the consumers first, I implore you to keep the exchange board free of members with conflicts of interest and provide it with the ability to set high standards for plans can be offered through the exchange. It will provide for people like Lisa and many others in my family the peace of mind that they can live a long, healthy life, even with diagnosis of Lynch syndrome. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. And if anybody happens to want any information on Lynch syndrome, these booklets are up here.
Thank you, Mr. Warner, very much. Thank you both for coming today and testifying before this committee. And members, in light of the length of the testimony that we have heard and the fact that we don't have this room any longer this evening, we're going to lay the bill over and hear it and have questions tomorrow in committee. We will be here in the basement at regular committee time, 4 o'clock.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And I think that's both you and the author I want to thank. I think that's a wise decision because we do have some questions. Will all of the people that testified tonight be able to get back here tomorrow? And it is nice to get back to the basement, by the way.
Representative Poppy, I just wanted to, before we adjourn here, extend the invitation to all of the testifiers and the folks here that are interested in this piece of legislation to come back tomorrow, 4 o'clock in the basement hearing room. This is the end of this committee, and thank you all for coming.
Madam Chair, if I might, just a heads up for members tomorrow. We've got a hearing before that relative to lockouts, which are becoming a more common tool in labor management situations. So we're going to hear that, and then we'll take up this bill. My apologies, by the way. We anticipated wrongly what the amount of testimony was going to be. So I took literally pages of notes from those people that testified regarding the bill, and I appreciate the input. Some of their items are for other committees, and I will anticipate bringing those concerns along to future committees. But your testimony has definitely been heard, and I personally apologize. I know that Representative Anderson had questions for particular witnesses, and in the very least, we wanted to hear from people that came here to testify today, so I respect the Chair's decision in getting through the testifiers to the extent they can return. That's wonderful.
if they can't, I'm sure that we can make do and get through it ourselves with the questions. We've got folks that will be back tomorrow to answer any questions that that members have. If there are amendments and you have them, if you can, again, we don't have a 24-hour rule, but if you have them and you want to share them with us, that's great. If you don't, that's fine. Otherwise, we're going to take up amendments and do the take a vote on the bill tomorrow afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence.
And thank you, Representative Atkins. We are adjourned.